Welcome to our program. Mezzo TV is a production by the Mesothelioma Applied Research Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. This program is made possible by the support of the law firms of Bellick & Fox, MRHFM, Polaris Pharmaceuticals, Bristol Myers Squibb, and the Gorey Law Firm. We are joined today by Dr. Melina Marmarellis from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Dr. Marmarellis is a medical oncologist who specializes in thoracic medical oncology, and she is the medical director of the Penn Medicine Mesothelioma and Pleural Disease Program.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Meso TV. We're joined today by Dr. Melina Marmarellis from the University of Pennsylvania. I'll let you introduce yourself, Dr. Marmarellis, and tell us a bit about what you do.
Great, thanks so much. I'm Melina Marmarellis. I'm a thoracic medical oncologist at the University of Pennsylvania, and I have a specific interest in mesothelioma. Along with Keith Sengal, we run the program at the University of Pennsylvania. In addition to our surgeons, our pulmonologists, our radiologists, and I'm really happy to be here talking with you today.
Thank you. Today's topic is precision medicine. Dr. Marmarellis, can you give us a simple definition of what is precision medicine?
Yeah, sure. You know, precision medicine is such a buzzword these days, but really what it means is that we're using information from a specific tumor to help us choose the right treatment for a patient. So that could be really any type of information. That could be molecular information. That could be histology, meaning just, you know, the shape they see under the microscope. It could even be something like the location of the tumor. But it's just the certain characteristics of the disease and then matching that to the right treatment.
Okay. There's a lot of words that can be confusing around precision medicine when patients hear them, other buzzwords such as biomarkers, mutations, genomic profiling. Can you explain some of these terms and how they relate to precision medicine and even more so mesothelioma?
Yeah, so I think, you know, similar to what we were just talking about, precision medicine can have a lot of different aspects to it. So I'll kind of break down a few of them. The first is that I think the way that we, in mesothelioma, the way that we kind of best use precision medicine right now is histology. So basically that means looking at the shape of the cells under the microscope and determining whether it came from epithelioid cells, sarcomatoid cells, or a mix of the two. And that really helps us determine how well a patient might respond to chemotherapy or immunotherapy. So that's kind of our first, indicator of which treatment to choose. And I would say that that's actually would be considered a biomarker in mesothelioma. A biomarker actually can be anything that predicts either a good or a bad response to a certain treatment. So it could be histology, like epithelioid or sarcomatoid histology. It also can be, a little bit more specific or sophisticated. You mentioned mutations and genomic profiling. Mutations and genomic profiling are similar. So that's when you actually take the biopsy, the tumor, and do a deeper dive into some of the changes in the DNA that may have caused or may contribute to the growth that we're seeing that led it to become a cancer. So this is, again, kind of more information about this cancer, you know, creating its personality, its, specific characteristics. Mutations, which is part of genomic profiling, could be viewed as a biomarker as well, as long as there's data to suggest that a certain piece of information actually then relates to a certain outcome on a treatment. I think that's where the actually becomes more difficult. That's the most difficult part of biomarkers and precision medicine is, we have a lot of data about characteristics of a tumor and we have a lot of outcome data. And creating that causality from this specific characteristic leads to this specific outcome with this treatment is actually quite difficult.
Do you recommend that all mesothelioma patients would have this testing performed or some of the type of this testing? And if so, which type? Because there's a lot of questions. People say, I haven't had my tumor tested, or should I have it tested, or when should I have it tested?
So I think the first, the first piece of that is certainly every patient with mesothelioma should do a thorough investigation into their histology of their mesothelioma. So whether it's epithelioid, sarcomatoid, or biphasic histology, and that may seem like a given, but actually a lot of people get very small biopsies, and sometimes they're not able to tell really which histology it is. And given that that's probably the best biomarker that we have, I really do encourage people to, go for the bigger biopsy so that we can get that information, because that's actually the most valuable information we have in terms of determining the type of treatment. In terms of molecular testing, that's an evolving question. Right now, in standard of care, there is not a specific targeted therapy that we would use based on that information. It's still something that I would recommend. And the reason that I recommend it is that there are a lot of clinical trials looking at targeted therapies and kind of ways to use that information to pick the right treatment. And so if you get that information at the beginning, especially when perhaps you've had the larger biopsy or the bigger biopsy that you're going to have, then we have that and we can be planning our plan B, plan C for, the next treatments down the road.
Can any of these change? I know in breast cancer, sometimes they change after you've had treatment. So is this something where you need to be rebiopsied or have these mutations retested?
Not in mesothelioma. So
Okay.
in breast cancer in particular, that has to do with expression of a protein.
Right.
And so that can actually change, with treatment. There is in lung cancer and in some other cancers, there is some there are some molecular characteristics that can change over time. In mesothelioma, we haven't seen that in a way that we could use clinically. So I'm very comfortable using the molecular testing that's done at diagnosis to then guide future treatments.
Good to know. Are there any mutations that we know at this time, or the Excel expressions, the different terms that are commonly found in mesothelioma patients?
Yeah, I think, this is a common question that we get asked and also that we think about a lot, because a lot of people hear, especially in lung cancer, that we have a lot of these targeted therapies for specific mutations. And so I want to kind of take a step back and look at the types of mutations that we see in mesothelioma versus, say, something like lung cancer. In lung cancer, we see mutations that are activating. So the changes in the DNA essentially create an overactive pathway in the cell that leads to growth, and that leads to lung cancer. And so the way that you target that is you shut it down. So you target that overactive mutant protein and you stop the growth. That's actually a much easier way than targeting something that happens in mesothelioma, which is that the change is usually in actually a gene that suppresses tumor growth. So if you all of a sudden have a mutation basically on the brakes instead of the gas pedal, then you're letting it grow just because you don't have brakes. So that's a little bit harder to target. There have now been some investigations into kind of things that are downstream of that pathway and taking advantage of that. And that's how we're starting to kind of look at targeted therapies in mesothelioma, but it's actually quite different than these overactive mutations in lung cancer. So a few of them in meso, probably the most common mutation that we hear about is BAP1. And that can be both found in normal cells or it could be found in the tumor cells in mesothelioma. Right now, it tends to be prognostic and not predictive. So what that means is, it tends to mean people do fairly well overall, but it doesn't necessarily mean they do better with a certain treatment versus another. And so there are a lot of clinical trials right now looking at trying to target this, given how common it is in mesothelioma, but none of them have made it all the way to the standard of care. So still, that's an active area. There are a few others that are exciting, and there are clinical trials right now. NF2, MTAP, and CDKN2A mutations may be things that may make patients eligible for clinical trials looking at those targeted therapies.
And are those again the type of mutations or things again that are where the brakes are absent?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not the overactive, genes. It's taking. It's kind of affecting the brakes.
So sometimes when patients look at other cancers and, for lack of a better word, are a little envious or say, how come in other cancers they have, these therapies like you see BRAF where you can use for melanoma or these treatments where they find a treatment and it works so well. That helps to explain. It's because you're pulling back on something and it makes it a little easier to do it. So mesothelioma has some special characteristics that make it harder to treat. So
Definitely a challenge.
you just have to work a little harder to find the treatments, right? I was going to ask also if there were any targeted treatments to these mutations, and it sounds like there's some clinical trials, but nothing that's FDA approved. The other question was, can the any of the mutational testing show what treatments would not be an option?
Yeah, so I'll kind of address the first part first, which is so for NF2 mutations, the clinical trials are for something called TEAD inhibitors, and again, this is taking advantage of kind of something downstream of that change. And then for MTAP and CDKN2A mutations, we're looking at PRMT5 inhibitors. And there are several trials of each of these types going on around the country. And those are probably the most common targeted therapies that we're seeing in the trials right now. In terms of, whether this information tells us about what treatments are not options, is a great question. And it's something that we are now in lung cancer, we're actually, to that point where we're using the genomic profile, so the different, set of mutations to say, well, this patient may do better or worse on chemotherapy or immunotherapy. Right now, for mesothelioma, we're not doing that as much. So the molecular, the types of mutations you have are not necessarily going to direct what treatments are not an option, but they may open up doors to, some treatments that could be options.
I had a patient ask me about PD-1, PD-L1, if there's testing, the testing shows whether or not they would be a good candidate for therapy based on the testing. And I told him it was a little bit different than with some of the other therapies. And I wondered if you could just briefly speak about that.
Yeah, so PD-L1 is a stain that's done on biopsies. It's a protein that's on the cell surface, and it's essentially the docking site for immunotherapy. So theoretically, if you want immunotherapy to be interacting with your tumor and the immune cells around it, you want a lot of docking sites. So in lung cancer, it having a lot of docking sites, a high percentage of PD-L1, often means that there's a pretty good chance that the disease will shrink with immunotherapy. And so it's something that's been looked at in mesothelioma and a lot of the immunotherapy trials that have been done. With mixed results. So, certainly there seems to be a trend for the higher PD-L1 that there's, perhaps more patients that are getting a good disease response to immunotherapy. But on the other end, for people that have a low PD-L1 or no expression, so 0%, or less than 1% is what it looks like on the report. There actually are people that are still getting a good response with immunotherapy. So it's actually not, it's not very predictive in mesothelioma. I don't use it as a biomarker. I don't use it as a way to determine who will get immunotherapy. If I'm on the fence about whether to use immunotherapy in a certain situation and the patient has a very high PD-L1, that might push me a little bit towards it, but having a low PD-L1 is not going to push me away from immunotherapy.
One other question I got from patients are, our patients are wonderful. They're very smart. They do a lot of research and they ask a lot of great questions. So I like to have some of those addressed by an expert like you. Another question that a patient asked me was about mutational burden and about how they lower, I heard that a high mutational burden is good, but I wondered if you could speak to the fact of mesothelioma and the low mutational burden.
So the mutational burden is something that has been looked at across cancers, and basically what it means is it's the number of mutations that you have. So, having a lot of mutations means a high tumor mutational burden. And that in some cancers has been linked with a better response to immunotherapy, so more tumor shrinkage with immunotherapy. And the thought behind it is if you're stimulating the immune system and you have a lot of mutations that might make it easier for the immune system to recognize the cancer, then you have a better chance of the immune system actually attacking the cancer. What we have found out more recently is that it really matters which types of mutations you have. So again, this actually goes back to mesothelioma being this kind of exceptional case of the type of mutation. And so those mutations are not quite as immunogenic as perhaps some of the other ones, and also the mutational burden is lower. So we both have the kind of wrong type of mutations and a low mutational burden. So it's not something that's been predictive in mesothelioma and not something we use to kind of decide whether patients should get immunotherapy or not.
So don't they shouldn't feel like, oh, it's not going to work for me because I have a low number.
And to be fair, actually, in lung cancer, we don't really use it either, even though that's where there's, this stronger data. It's a very difficult biomarker because it has a lot of, it includes a lot of different types of mutations. It's not just a number is not very indicative.
And speaking about the patients and all the research they're doing, another hot topic among patients, what they're researching is the oncolytic viruses and using that with the tumor-specific peptides and how that relates to precision medicine. I thought maybe you could explain that.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on here, a lot of news articles about it too. So I can see what people are asking about it. So, the idea here is that we can use viruses to our advantage, the way that this is done in cancer is that they want a virus that's specific to the tumor, that's able to kill the tumor cells, and then also that process stimulates a broader immune response. So even if you're directing, the virus at a certain part of the tumor, and usually this is done actually by injecting directly into the tumor, you're getting actually a response even, further away. So the way that they do that is that, first of all, the viruses are usually inactivated, meaning that they can't replicate, they can't cause you to have an infection, but that they are loaded with some sort of either gene therapy, which means that it actually changes the genetic makeup of the tumor when it actually attacks the tumor, or that it ends up expressing something that's inflammatory and can cause kind of an immune response there. There have been trials looking at this approach in mesothelioma. There was one actually where it was injected into the fluid around the pleura, so into the pleural fluid, kind of creating a more general immune response. And I think this is certainly an interesting avenue. It's something we're seeing more and more in other tumors like melanoma, and we're starting to see it in lung. And so I think something definitely to look out for.
The last question that I have is, where do you see the field of precision medicine as a whole just evolving in the future for mesothelioma?
Yeah, so I think, I think what's exciting is that, even in the last few years, we've already made really big strides towards becoming more precise with our treatment. And mostly I'm referring to histology being, our primary guide in determining the treatment. But also some of these exciting clinical trials where we're, there are innovative ways to take advantage of these different types of mutations. Some of the other things that we didn't touch on, but are some things that are out there either, in trials or in development are CAR T cell therapies. So this is, where you actually take the cells. So it's like a blood draw. You take the patient's own cells, you engineer the immune system, the T cells, to actually target the tumor. For the most part, that's targeting a protein called mesothelin, which is on the surface of a lot of mesotheliomas. And then you give it back to the patient and let the immune system kind of do that work. That can also be done, there are targets for mesothelin in other ways that don't necessarily have to take blood from the patient. So that's certainly something that we're looking at as well. And then I
Isn't there
think
a trial for that right now too? A CAR T trial, I think.
there are several CAR T trials around the country. We have two different CAR T products, and there are several other centers that also have those. They are challenging trials because they're still very, still in development, and they take a long lead time. So, I mentioned that the patient has to get their blood drawn, then their own blood has to be manufactured and then given back to them. So, that process takes, 6 to 8 weeks. So that's certainly a barrier, but something, something we're still excited about and looking at.
So the future is just more targeted therapies and working more with the CAR T. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I hope that we can use, the molecular information that we're gathering to be more precise, to your point, which treatment would be good, which treatment would be bad for this patient. And with a rare tumor like mesothelioma, we really have to work together to pool all the information of outcomes and genomic data to be able to sit to, really make predictions about how patients will do.
Well, I thank you very much for your time, and I think I know I've learned a lot, and I'm sure our patients will as well. So, is there anything going on at University of Pennsylvania that you want to share with us that's particularly exciting?
No, I mean, I mentioned a lot of the trials that are ongoing. We are participating in many of those. And so, certainly would be happy to talk to patients about any of them if they're interested.
They can
But
get
I
in touch
think,
with me, and I will lead them to you.
lots of other places also that might be closer to them that have them as well. But I just thank you for the opportunity for getting to talk about this. I think it's a great topic.
Yes, and thank you.